This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 89 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. We're glad that you're back this week. We missed you last time, but we did okay, I guess, without you. Although I'll tell you, it just didn't feel quite the same.
Well, I appreciate it. And I appreciate our fans putting up with a bit of a family crisis last week. And we're dealing with ramifications this week. But we still got a show for you, and boy, do we've got a dense show. It's sort of the August for new cars for the drone universe this week. I guess car companies don't do that anymore, but August used to be the big release date for the new models. This week, we've got two big drone companies with two new drones, and one is targeting the other, I can tell. Insurance companies get exemptions from the FAA. Yay! Nice to hear my industry is getting some love from the FAA. EASA, or EASA, looks to revamp regs. And, of course, we have UASs and export controls because we can't go a week without talking about FAAs. So I think that's a pretty dense set of topics. I think we should get started, don't you?
All right, let's get started, David.
Well, I guess the big news breaking this week was DJI unveiled the Phantom 3. The article was from Forbes.com. The Phantom is the quality photography drone for everybody. Well, the Phantom 3 is slated to become quickly the ubiquitous drone to replace its brother, the Phantom 2. It's interesting the price points that they put it at. It's RTF, or ready to fly. There's two versions, the 1259 Professional or the 999 Advanced. The Professional has a better camera with 1080p with a 4K camera, and it's still a thousand plus less than the Inspire 1, their top-of-the-line professional camera.
Yeah, and there's some other changes. Both of these models, the Professional and the Advanced, come with this LightBridge technology, they call it. And this allows real-time, high-definition HD video from, they say, up to a mile away. So that's kind of a first-person view capability, I guess, that could be kind of impressive.
FPV by any other name is still FPV. They both come with DJI's Ronin 3-axis gimbal, which is, I think, the class setting gimbal to for stabilizing the cameras. But the other really breaking news, I think, and this is really cool, was the DJI app, which includes all the updates, etc., has a built-in flight simulator. What do you think about that, Max?
I guess this is something that would help newbies learn how to fly a little bit more, well, safely, I guess, and maybe quickly.
And give you the skills to pre-plan your flight. You know, if you've got a flight simulator, you can pre-plan your flight and fly it before you actually fly it, which good for DJI to note that there was a bit of a gap there. And they're trying to be very active or proactive in keeping safety first and educating their consumers.
Yeah, I think that's right, David. And they also seem to have now established that they're interested or committed to improving and upgrading the equipment. Because here we are with the Phantom 3, and the first Phantom, the original Phantom, was released not that long ago.
It's hard to believe, but it's only been 2 years, almost as long as we've been doing this show, that DJI released the very first Phantom, and I thought it was much longer than that, but they've had three incarnations with quantum leaps in technology in 2 years. So it's amazing how exponential DJI and how quickly they're moving, which I guess explains why they are the number one target for other companies like 3D robotics.
Right. We see in Engadget an item. This is 3D robotics teases stylish drone with pro features. And this really is a teaser. There's a video that 3D Robotics has released. It does show an image of a quadcopter. They say this is going to be introduced on April 13th, so that's coming up pretty quick as we record this. And we don't know a lot about this, but when I saw this video, David, I had the thought that it doesn't look exactly like a Phantom, but it looks a lot more like a Phantom than other 3D robotics quadcopters, wouldn't you say?
Well, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Yeah, it looks a lot like a Phantom. It's got that sort of solid center with very thick arms holding the rotors.
Right.
My takeaway, you could tell that I'm the science fiction geek, was, boy, was it a homage to 2001 Space Odyssey.
The video.
The video is, and there's some really cool, this could be our video of the week. It's kind of cool that the ape gets a hold of the box, and the box has got a very similar layout to what was on the side of Voyager 1. You know, it's got the planets, and from the third little dot comes this little quadcopter, you know, and there's a man and a woman, and inside of it is the quadcopter. So I guess next week we'll be talking a little bit more about what we're getting with 3D robotics releasing it on April 13th.
Yeah, now in the Engadget article, they kind of, well, guess at or make some speculations about what this thing will look like, what it'll do. Engadget believes that it'll have a first-person view. They say a pre-programmable flying route, maybe even follow-me settings. They see some things that indicate to them that this may have built-in follow-me settings. And also a new gimbal design. But a lot of that speculation, just by looking at the video that 3DR has provided. And like you say, David, we'll have to wait till after the 13th to get some more information about just what this is and how much it will cost, which will be a kind of a key item. It's interesting, though, that these two announcements from 3D Robotics and from DJI come out at the same time. I wonder if there was any kind of, you know, you go first, you know, no, you go first to try to see what the competition is up to and be able to respond to that. But I guess if that's what happened, 3D Robotics sort of won out there. And I wonder if it'll affect the pricing that they announce on the 13th. But again, we'll have to wait and see.
But 3D Robotics also launched something called DroneKit. And this was from TechCrunch.com. 3D Robotics launches DroneKit as its API for building drone apps. This is a little bit older. It's a couple weeks old, but they launched an open source API for writing drone apps. It works with any drone that uses its APM autopilot, which this is. 3D Robotics has always prided itself on open source technology, and here they are opening the gateway for an API to do apps for it. Good for them.
DJI drones don't fall into that category, so this won't work with them. But with this API, this allows developers to write, well, both web-based and mobile apps. And not only that, but apps that you can run on the drone itself. And I think for those who have a programming bent, this uses a Python programming language. The 3D Robotics DroneKit website, which is dronekit.io, offer some examples of what you could do with this API. They talk about building a web service that lets you download drone data in flight, sending live flight logs, creating apps that communicate directly with this APM flight controller from a companion computer, and also things like running computation-intensive computer vision or path planning or 3D modeling tasks using the drone kit. So a lot of possibilities. And when it's open source like this, David, and you know, kind of given out as a resource for anyone who wants to use it, we'll see all kinds of creative uses, things probably that we can't even imagine right now. And that's a great way to advance the technology. And it's also good for 3D robotics.
It'll actually give them a leg up. You know, while DJI has got a closed platform, 3D robotics can say, hey, you know, you want to learn to program for UAVs, use our technology. And so it's another way to leverage their skills over their number one competitor.
That's right.
We can't go a week without talking about the FAA. I mean, that's what we're here for. We're FAA 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
It feels that way, doesn't it?
365. Well, they were active this week, and this was from AUVSI.org. The FAA approved more than 30 commercial UAS exemptions, including exemptions for insurance companies like USAA and AIG. Yay! Let's hear it for the insurance industry. For those who don't know, that's what I do to pay for the ability to do this. But USAA released a press release, quote, "The Federal Aviation Administration approved USAA's petition on April 2nd to conduct research and development on its new unmanned aircraft system, UAS program, to better serve its members, especially after catastrophes."
Yeah, and this is another great application. We've talked about using drones in cases of natural disasters, things like that. And I guess here the insurance industry is taking notice of that, and they're looking to be able to survey areas after catastrophes, they say, in order to assess damage and get to the point where they can provide relief to their customers sooner. There've been some examples, I guess, David, where they, you know, were unable to get into an area after some kind of a natural disaster, let's say, because it just wasn't safe. But using UAS, they can get in much sooner, is the concept.
And they are working with Precision Hawk, which would be, it's probably a winged item. But if you use the example like we had here, Hurricane Sandy or Superstorm Sandy, the ability to survey that area quickly to assess damages, to speed claims. Despite what a lot of people think, the insurance company does want to pay out claims. That's what their job is. And it's important to get people their money. And the quicker you can do it, the better off. You know, if you need to be able to cut a check for somebody who says half of their house is missing, but it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks before you can get to that house to verify that half of the house is missing, you could send a drone over, view it, confirm what the client is saying, and cut a preliminary check. And then when you have the ability, go in and do the final claim on it. And you know what? One of the other added benefits is, so there's an insurance drone flying over, looking out over this storm damage area, and there's a person trapped who needs help. As a sideline, you know what? There's more than one application. And wouldn't it be great that, you know, that one drone found somebody who was trapped on a rooftop or something that they could get help to?
Sure. And the USAA has teamed up with Texas A&M University. They're going to work with them to research and develop how to effectively use UAS in this way. And this research and development is being conducted through the university's Roboticists Without Borders group. That's part of the Center for Robot-Assisted Search and Rescue. But, you know, David, one other interesting thing that I picked up from this article and the press releases from USAA is the person who's leading this effort in the company, the employee who's leading this, who is Kathleen Swain. And, you know, it's not just some random employee who got assigned the task to figure this all out. She's an aviator. She earned her aviator's license when she was only in her teens. She's flown commercially. She's an FAA certified instructor, has over 2,000 hours of flight time. And she even has done some work as a contract instructor pilot for the Air Force at Holloman Air Force Base. So, like I say, they haven't just, you know, snatched up some random employee to give an assignment to. They've got a person that understands aviation, which I think is great. And that ought to lead to, you know, a more effective integration of this technology into that insurance company's operations.
But that's only two exemptions. There were 28 more. Some of the other ones were AeroVironment was granted for aerial survey and patrol applications, and SenseFly for precision alcohol. You can tell we're recording this at 8 a.m. in the morning, 11 hours earlier than we normally do. And SenseFly for precision agriculture, each using, of course, their own systems. So, believe it or not, the total number of approved exemptions is 99, and they've received 700 applications. Couldn't get that extra 31st one in there for an even 100, right? They had to leave it at 99.
Yeah, they're making progress, but the backlog is huge. 700 applications. Wow, that's quite a backlog. They are making progress, but as we know, the FAA's got limited resources to do this. And, I mean, they have a lot of other things on their plate at the same time. We're just glad to see that, you know, they are making progress in getting through these.
But, you know, in all fairness, Max, we also got to say that originally it was one a week, two a week, five a week, seven a week. Now we're up to 30 in 1 week. So clearly the train has started to move, and that's a good thing, you know, and good to the FAA that they're trying to get rid of the backlog on these COAs.
Next up, we have an item. This came from UASvision.com, a great resource. This is EASA presents its vision for the future of the aviation regulatory system. This is larger than just UAVs or RPAS, as the Europeans tend to prefer the remotely piloted aircraft systems acronym. But the EASA has published, EASA, of course, the European Aviation Safety Agency, has published an opinion. They call it an opinion. And this contains its proposals for the future of the aviation regulatory system, not just unmanned, but just in general. But they do touch on unmanned in a couple of spots. One is they have something that they call the General Aviation Roadmap. And what they want to do is introduce some regulations to make some changes. And some of these include RPAS.
And to quote, the necessary flexibility for small, low-risk GA as well as remotely piloted aircraft systems, RPASs, by introducing provisions which allow possible deviations from existing requirements where appropriate. So they're looking to say, okay, we need to tweak the universe. You know, we've issued some rules, and now looking back, we might need to change them. And good for them. I'm glad to see they're not taking the attitude that, it, you know, we made the rules, that's it. Clearly, there's an evolution going on, and we've seen that over the last 2 years that we've been doing this. And it's good for the EASA, and I think it's good now that, you know, the FAA and EASA, they're sort of both sort of feeling their way through it. But as one makes changes, the other one does. And as everybody seems to be learning from everybody else, sort of an open resource on how to handle this topic.
There's one phrase that they use in a couple of places in the opinion, which is proportionate risk-based provisions. So an example is they say the inclusion of all RPAS in the scope of the basic regulation and establishment of proportionate risk-based provisions for all RPASs. That terminology, proportionate risk-based provisions, I mean, they're not specified at this point, but that's kind of the view that they're taking. I think that's kind of telling in terms of where EASA is trying to drive this. But the opinion next, it goes to the European Commission, something that they use as input for an amendment to the EASA basic regulation. So we'll be following that, see how this materializes and translates into something specific that's applicable to the unmanned world.
So, Max, we got to talk about my primary industry, which is insurance. So I guess we should talk a little bit about your experiences in the past. And this was from Lexology.com. U.S. policy on the export of unmanned aerial systems, a detailed look and analysis. So this is your wheelhouse. This is what you used to do for a living. You want to take this one?
Export control, United States export control can be an incredibly dry subject, but it's primarily interesting in that if you run afoul of this, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble, and it's very easy to do. So what's happened here is
now, folks, he's not talking from experience, or, well, maybe he is.
Maybe he is. So this is kind of directed at people who will manufacture or are involved in the manufacture of unmanned vehicles, components, systems, any kind of technology, or who use it and may have an opportunity to export it. The State Department, the United States State Department, they've conducted a policy review of UAS, and they've issued a new policy that governs the export and use of both commercial and military unmanned systems. Now, in the past, you could actually export certain reconnaissance and surveillance drone systems only to U.S. allies, but typically not military or weaponized UAS. Well, this new policy does allow the export of some military UAS to U.S. allies under certain circumstances and uses, but the policy could also open up the export for more types of commercial UAS to other countries, not just allies, but, of course, subject to compliance with U.S. laws and regulations. And so here's what you need to know. In the United States, there are two sets of export regulations applicable to drones, to unmanned aircraft, also, as I said, components, systems, software, and technology. There's the ITAR, the International Traffic in Arms Regulations. That's controlled by the U.S. Department of State, and that applies, in this case, to military drones. But there's also the Export Administration Regulations, the EAR. And these are controlled by the U.S. Department of Commerce. And this is for kind of everything else other than military, other than strictly military. So that means for commercial use or dual use. Dual use meaning something that can be used in both a commercial and a military context. So what you have to do is you have to understand what items are subject to export control. And you also have to realize that an export isn't necessarily shipping an item out of the United States. If you're a manufacturer, let's say, or you have a research program where you have a lot of hardware sitting around on a table, and you have, let's say, a visitor touring your facility or your university or your lab or whatever it is, and that person happens to be a foreign national, just the fact that they walked past the bench and had an opportunity to look at something as they walked by, that can be deemed an export. So the article that we'll put in the show notes also contains a link to a fact sheet that you might find important to take a look at if you're involved in any of this stuff. Just one last point. You know, a lot of people think that, well, this is military, they're directed at the military, and this is all commercial stuff. Sometimes dual-use things can get you tripped up. There was an example not too long ago where a manufacturer of airliners happened to have a component in this jet that was dual-use. It's also used in some military applications. And they didn't realize that, and they didn't obtain an export license. So while they were selling this aircraft around the world, it was actually not in compliance with export control regulations, and that can generate, you know, just huge problems for a company. So long story short, export control regulations in the U.S. are something that, you know, if you've got a company in this area, you need to pay attention to. So, David, I guess enough said on that. Hope everybody's still awake.
Sorry. No, actually, Max, I mean, it is an important aspect. I mean, to this, we've always talked about, you know, drones are, but we never wanted to just talk about military drones. We wanted to talk about everything. And a lot of the small UAVs, you know, it's interesting, you know, they could be used for military applications, you know, off the shelf purchases. The military is always looking for, you know, and
yeah,
if for $2,000+ they can get a DJI Phantom 3 that'll work 100% better than the one they've spent $1 million for, I would hope that as my taxpayer, they would actually go out and buy that DJI Phantom 3. So, and remember that a lot of these drones are being produced overseas, so they're subject to export or import regulations as well. So, I mean, it's an important aspect. And I joke about, but it is kind of fascinating, especially the dual use part. Mm. We've heard clamoring from a lot of U.S. manufacturers that the U.S. import regulations have prevented them from doing business overseas, and they're losing businesses to, say, Israel or Russia or some of the other countries. In the case of DJI, it would be China. And the U.S. wants to have that advantage, and they want to be able to export these vehicles out of the country. Or more to the point, the technology, it doesn't necessarily have to be the hardware.
Exactly.
It's the software. That's where it even gets even kind of darker and scarier, is it's the software. So it's an important aspect, and we were sort of downplaying it. But let's get to talking about really, really important things. We're recording this on April 9th. That means that's 15 days, 2 weeks away from April 24th, 2015. And you know what that means? That means the comment period for the MPRM will be over, and we'll have nothing to talk about, and Max will only be able to give two more reports on this subject. So with no further ado, how many comments has the MPRM gotten, Max?
Well, as of this point, 2,720 comments. Just amazing. That's a lot of comments to work through. Some of them are, well,
unique.
Yeah, you can actually dip in and take a look at some of the actual comments. You know, some of them are great, and some of them are, well, the FAA is just going to have to read them and move on to the next one, I guess.
To quote the old song, read them and weep.
Read them and weep.
Yeah, our friend Bill English, who was a guest on the show about a month ago, occasionally sends us ones that he's found in his perusal of the ones you sort of go, really? But I still think, in all fairness, there's still more out there that's good than there is trash.
Yes.
I think we're sort of downplaying the funny ones, but I think there are really some really good ones that are well thought out, and I definitely recommend everybody go out and read them. And you know what? Read them before you make your comments, because maybe you can dovetail off of what somebody else has said and expound on it. But we only have 2 weeks left, unless, like the one we saw yesterday where they were asking for another 60-day exemption, which would make Max happy, because that would be 10 more weeks of reporting how many I really don't think they need to push it out beyond the 24th. I think 2,700, and we figure by next week it'll be, I know they'll hit go over 3,000, and I think that's a really good comment period.
What we don't know, of course, is how long it's going to take the FAA to get through them first, and then modify possibly the proposed regulations based on the feedback that they've gotten. We just don't know. So we'll just have to wait for the FAA to give us some kind of inkling as to when the next milestones will be reached after the comment period closes.
I guess with that, we're gonna call our video of the week the 3D robotics video, because it's really well done.
Yes.
And we did get some feedback, in this case from one of our friends, Bill Rote. Another great drone use is highlighted in the news. They worked hard to call them UASs, And they even showed the N number on the craft and pointed out that it was a licensed pilot flying it and only in line of sight. For news media, they got it all right for a change. Well done, Channel 8. And this was how SDG&E trains drone operators to help restore power. SDG&E is San Diego Gas and Electric.
Yeah, and they say that that company is the first utility company that's been approved by the FAA to use UAS. And currently they're doing some research and development, or they're in that research and development phase for its drone use. They have 26,000 miles of power lines in the San Diego and San Diego County and southern parts of Orange County that they are responsible for. And obviously there's another great application for using unmanned aircraft to survey, inspect all those miles of power lines. And Bill's point is that, you know, Channel 8, the news reporting on this was really good. Between the news reporting and SDG&E, everything's working the way it's supposed to. A great example of, you know, how other companies and industries should be doing this. So thanks, Bill, for setting that in.
And no, we're not jealous. That you have to rub it in that you live in San Diego, Bill. Just so you know, Max and I, we're getting to the point where we actually have normal weather now. So you can just stop rubbing it in that it's drop dead gorgeous in San Diego like you usually do.
Yeah.
But I think with that note, Max, I think we're running about our 30-minute limit. I don't think else we got anything to say. Next week, preview of coming attractions. Max will have another NPRM report. We'll have more news. We're working on guests. And
we want to thank you for listening to episode 89 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes, you can find those at theuavdigest.com/89 for episode 89.
And of course, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook/theUAVDigest. And if you want to leave us some feedback, you can always write us at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or if you'd like to reach Max or I, just change feedback to David or Max at theuavdigest.com. Leave us some feedback on your iTunes if you listen to us on iTunes. That way more people can find us. Or if you listen to it or stream us to your phone by using Stitcher. And of course, we have some swag. You can get some UAV Digest swag at cafepress.com/theUAVDigest. Or if you'd like to sponsor the show, you can sponsor us at Patreon, which is patreon.com/theUAVDigest. And of course, the swag and the donate links are on our homepage at theUAVDigest.com. So with that, this is David. Oh, and Max, I have to say, you did a really good job doing that presentation last week all by yourself.
Oh, thank you.
So with that, it's David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening. I think with that, I'm going to say it's David in Philly.
In Max and Hartford.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Do you want to tell folks like the websites and everything and Twitter?
Oh, why? Why would we want to do that? Okay, folks, we've recorded this at 8 a.m. in the morning, and this is not going to be what we would call our best show ever.
So let's just say that we want to thank you for listening to episode 89 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com.